Hello, and thank you for tuning in to The Seneca Scene, a podcast from The Herald, the campus newspaper of Hobart and William Smith Colleges. For the next few weeks, we are doing something different. Instead of focusing on people around campus, we are turning back the clocks and examining a fascinating part of our history. During the late 1960s, a time of activism, political turmoil, and social change, the campus of Hobart and William Smith Colleges was irrevocably altered. We will be focusing on the events leading up to 1970, when it was discovered that a man who had been seen as a radical was actually an undercover police officer. This man is known as Tommy the Traveler, and his tale has been retold for decades with legends, such as the firebombing of Cheryl Hall, existing to this day. In this 10-episode series, you will be hearing from a range of voices, including faculty, alums, and community members, who were all here at Hobart and William Smith Colleges and in Geneva for Tommy the Traveler. In addition to those interviews, we also have been combing through the archives looking at documents and newspaper articles from the time. Two of our writers and researchers will be in the studio with us talking about their work throughout the duration of this series. We hope that you will join us on this journey and are looking forward to sharing the story with you. I'm Alex Karai.
I'm Henry Dewar.
I'm Russell Payne.
And this is the Seneca Scene special series on Tommy the Traveler. Episode 5, The Raid at Superdorm, Part 1. The following episode discusses civil unrest in the 1960s on a college campus and has language, content, and themes that may be unsettling for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. After the Cheryl firebombing, what happens next? Does Tommy just disappear and leave the campus alone?
If only it were that easy.
No.
No.
So, what does happen? Do people, so going on campus at this time, just to kind of refresh our listeners' memory, there's a lot of drugs and a lot of marijuana. Mm-hmm. Like a lot. It is
substantial.
The 1960s.
Amount. Yeah.
It's now 1970, and we still have this going on, but we know that Tommy's an undercover cop. Mm-hmm. We know that these drugs are illegal. So what happens?
Well, so apparently Tommy had been, smoking some pot with some kids and had figured out where people were, he had schmoozed his way in with some of the distributors.
You know, the campus was considered a hotbed of radical politics and drugs.
When you would go into one of the houses, fraternity houses, you could smell marijuana. Very obvious.
And Tommy never smoked because he said it was very anti-revolutionary.
We all knew who the big drug suppliers were on campus. It's a small campus. You know who's selling the drugs. So does Tommy go for the guys who are selling the drugs on campus? No. He goes for some guy. I don't remember his name. I think his first name was Michael. He gets Michael to sell him $5 or $10 of marijuana, and he's going to go bust Michael, which was just insane. And then to find out that the guy who's under arrest is somebody who's not involved in drugs at all, it was like he did him a favor, you know? And it was just too much.
That was Steve Bromberg, Walter Gage, and a clip from the 1971 Mark Weiss documentary, The Revolutionary Was a Cop. Now, before we talk about the rest of the story, it's important to set the scene to understand just how volatile this situation was. So this night of the raid, it's occurring at a dorm called Superdorm that we now know as JPR, Jackson, Potter, and Reese. It's this massive, basically three-dorm complex. It's four floors, probably about 24 rooms per floor or so. And now all of the first years at HWS live in JPR. But at the time, this was a new dorm that a lot of upper-class male students lived in. To get to this dorm, you have to go down a single road because everyone used the back door of Superdorm. So it's down this back road that has one entrance, and it's the same way to exit. It's one way. And it's also surrounded kind of on all sides by other dormitory buildings. So if you remember Cheryl from our last episode that had the ROTC office that was firebombed, that's on the right side as you enter the drive to Superdorm. On the left, you also have some houses that are occupied by students that are basically dormitory housing. And we'll hear from some people who lived in those houses later and what it was like to come down or to at least see the chaos that is basically down their driveway. Along the main road, we have a street called St. Clair. That is where Cheryl is, and that's where this entrance to Superdorm is, and that's where later on the riot police start lining up. But first, Tommy is bringing the police down the single one-way street, leading them to Superdorm. Essentially, blocking them in and leading them into this area where they can get totally surrounded. So it's important that you have an idea, a picture of what's going on right now, a picture of what this area looks like. Because there isn't really a way out.
No, they were just penned in there with essentially no way of taking themselves or their prisoners out. You know, they weren't about to just hoof it, not through a riot. So they were completely penned in there once the people had decided that they didn't want to let them leave.
Yeah, as we said freshman year, welcome to the arena.
On the morning of June 5th at 12:30 a.m., members of the Ontario County Sheriff's Department came onto the Hobart campus to make arrests for narcotics possession on information provided by Thomas Tanyai.
There was this big commotion in the parking lot behind Superdorm. And there were some police cars and a bunch of students. Students were kind of flooding the area.
As I recall, I mean, it was exam week, or, you know, it was sort of, so a lot of, you know, people were up studying and things of that nature.
It was either the day after the last exam or the night before the last exam. It was right before graduation.
All of a sudden, there was a lot of commotion. The library had just closed, and there was a lot of people kind of going in and out of the dorm.
And a very pleasant, warm night, clear. And so I walked over there.
And then they showed up, drug bust. All right, drug bust.
So Tommy tells the cops, hey, you know, I know my way around this place, and so we're going to drive in with our three police cars, and we're going to pull off an arrest of this guy who just sold me the marijuana. And he drives three police cars, he leads three police cars down a very narrow driveway behind Superdorm.
And somebody from down at the end of the hall came down and just said, hey, this is a bust. So people cleaned out as much of the things they could in their room, and we had drop ceilings, and so people would, you know, just take things out, put it in the drop ceiling in the communal area, and then you know, assuming that if it were ever found, if it was that big a bust, it would be that nobody was going to bother to tie it to you.
Once the word got out that something was going on, first of all, there was a lot of activity to get rid of the stuff that the raid was right. Focused on finding. There's stories about things being put in the ceiling.
Concealing in the ceiling, yes.
And into the toilets, etc.
And also the ceiling is anonymous. I mean, whose ceiling is that?
You know, throw your drugs away. The rumors started spreading. Throw your pot down the toilet or whatever.
And immediately, the windows of some of the rooms facing the back, facing the parking lot, started going up. People saw it. and they were yelling, you know, get rid of your drugs.
It was really like the Super Bowl halftime as far as soon as the police raid was announced, I guess there was flushing of toilets all over campus because people were flushing their drugs. So I guess it was just wild.
And then people started saying, Tommy's in the car leading the drug bust because he smoked pot with all these people they're arresting. He knows exactly what rooms to go to.
That was an excerpt from the Mark Weiss video, The Revolutionary Was a Cop, along with interviews with John Hennessy, Henry Lenz, Steve Bromberg, Bill Ryder, Maureen Collins-Zupan, Dan Watkins, Richard Wasserman, Joanne Dunn, and Nancy Nowak Rutherford.
Yeah, the freshmen are very understandably upset.
What really kicked things into the next gear was when people saw, the police as they tried to leave with their prisoners. They were accompanied by none other than Tommy the Traveler.
And then all hell broke loose. People were screaming in the windows, and I was like, I came down to the bottom of the hill, and I was standing in the edge of the parking lot, and thinking, what in the world? And a lot of students were starting to come out into the parking lot at that point, kind of pouring out of the doors and stuff. And I'm trying to find my roommate because she's in Reese upstairs on the top floor. And I went in the dorm to try to get to her, find out what was going on. And we then came back down. And meanwhile, people from Beta Sigma had heard the noise and come down. So I think my boyfriend came down, a lot of other people came down, we're all sort of standing together trying to figure out what in the world is this, what is this? But meanwhile, people we knew were going out the other side of Superdorm because they figured they were targets because they probably sold grass.
And I woke up hearing a roar, just something that was different. There was a lot of noise. And I went looking for what this was and looked out the back window sill and saw hundreds of people down there. And frankly, it was just eerie and terrifying.
Then they started trying to back out, and there were people around. And then they had at least one flat tire. And then I remember this other guy who is still with us, and I won't mention who it was, but he pulled his car, as I recall, it was like a Chevy Impala, 68 Chevy Impala, and pulled his car out in front and blocked their way out of that narrow driveway. And by that time, there were like 100 people or more there, and people were really, going at the other tires and things like that. And I remember the Geneva cop telling this particular individual, get your car out of the way. And he goes and gets in his car and then just does something that says it won't start and goes to lift his hood. And
somebody popped the hood on the cop car, ripped out the distributor wires. There wasn't a riot, but there was a lot of yelling. There was a lot of commotion. And this all happened after they had arrested a couple of people for drugs and kind of handcuffed them and took them down to the car. So in the car was Traveler. It was, I think, the students they arrested. I think one or two other policemen. And, it was a high tension atmosphere.
That was Joanne Dunn, Maureen Collins-Zupan, Bill Ryder, and Henry Lenz.
And there's just students building up outside of Cheryl Hall and JPR.
Yeah, the single access road to that entire area of pavement essentially was just completely blocked by, from reports of hundreds of students just being there. And we've had varying levels of sort of confirmations as to how rowdy things got. But from my understanding of it, it was kind of like an anthill. being kicked. At first, like, nothing happens, and then all of a sudden, it's just a swarm.
Exactly. And,
yeah, that's kind of my understanding of it. They really started going to town on the car that one of the cop cars, and they were ripping off the hood and, you know, tearing at the spark plugs and slashing the tires, and, like, they just completely decimated this machine.
And so the cops can't leave with the kids they've arrested. And so they're kind of in this predicament. And the students are obviously very angry at, you know, one report says that they're beginning to pile up rocks to throw at the cops. Yeah. And, you know, people are talking about, like, the stuff that Tommy had been saying.
He said that what we should have done was not run into the policeman head on, but six or seven of us should have taken one policeman off into a corner, kicked the shit out of him, and then come back and get another policeman, run him off in the corner, kick the shit out of him. And he kept on saying that the wrong tactic is not to march down the street and confront the policeman, it's just to take them into the corner and kill them.
You know, that's the attitude that he was inciting, and that's kind of the attitude that is not necessarily, well, it's not necessarily the attitude that the students are having, but that's kind of what they're scared is going to happen.
That's what they see that face, and that's what they think.
Yeah.
And now they see him here as a cop, and they're like, oh God, you know, the person who's been advocating, you know, and, you know, preaching all this violence is actually, he's with the government?
That was audio from the 1971 documentary, The Revolutionary Was a Cop. Here are interviews with Dan Watkins, Maureen Collins-Zupan, and Joanne Dunn.
Since Tommy's, I am told that Tommy's identity had been cracked and people understood.
That night.
Yeah. And
he showed up.
And what they were doing was trying to use what information they had, make it into a drug bust, so that then they had the deniability of saying, well, you know, he was a narc and all these people were using drugs, so that's a perfectly reasonable cause to be on campus, to turn it into he was there to prevent this terrible drug scene, as opposed to he was there to radicalize individuals and report about them to.
Which is what he was known for, educating people on radical anti-war activities.
And was he not the one who
taught the first year students to do the make Molotov cocktails
to throw at ROTC in the basement of Cheryl Hall?
That was our they were freshmen and we were sophomores that year that happened. Yeah.
It is reliably reported that he was the one who didn't give them but
told them,
incited
how to do
them
it.
And encouraged them and gave them the intellectual.
So I think a lot of the energy that night was about people being so angry.
Yes.
That this guy that was supposedly teaching anti-war stuff, which a lot of people on campus didn't like and refuse once they heard him doing a lot of this education, refused to participate in. But so once they saw that what he really was an undercover narcotics officer, the energy was all anger.
And so we sort of impromptuly formed a command post down on the first floor in the lounge area, to try to figure out what was going on, and people were running in and out. They were getting on the phones, trying to figure out, you know, calling the president's house, trying to figure out what we should do. But meanwhile, the students on the other side had blocked in the driveway. And so that went on for hours and hours and hours. And then we started calling the media. So people were getting on the payphones. I always remember this as being the most amusing thing. They got on the payphones. They were calling the newspapers and the TV stations. And a couple people knew people in New York City, and they were calling the New York City stations. Because we just didn't know what was going to happen. But there was a fear level, I think, of the police. You know, law enforcement. Nobody was naive enough to think that if they were drugs on, you know, if they had drugs in hand, they were going to get arrested. I think everybody kind of knew that. But we were also afraid.
That was Episode 5, The Raid at Superdorme, Part 1. You've been listening to the Seneca Scenes miniseries on Tommy the Traveler. Stay tuned for Episode 6, The Raid at Superdorme, Part 2. A preview is at the end of this episode. Thank you for tuning in to the Seneca Scene. You can subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, or on the Herald website by going to hwsherald.com/podcast. This episode series was created by Alex Karai and Albright DeWorka. Our team on this series is Grace Rubel, Russell Payne, Henry Dewar, Albright DeWorka, and Alex Karai. Our show is produced by Alex Karai. This series was written by Alex Karai, Grace Rubel, and Russell Payne. Our show is hosted by Alex Karai with Russell Payne and Henry Dewar. Archival research was done by Russell Payne and Henry Dewar. Additional research by Grace Rubel. Additional materials were provided by Henry Lenz from the Class of 1972, members of the Classes of 1972 or thereabouts Facebook group, Andrew Wickenden from the Class of 2009, and Professor Ani Mukherjee. Interviews were conducted and recorded by Alex Karai. Interviews compiled by Henry Dewar and Russell Payne. Video materials compiled by Albright DeWorka. Our thanks to the guests that appeared on this episode. This episode was edited by Albright DeWorka. Sound engineering and podcast recording by Alex Karai in the WEOS studio at the Scanlon Campus Center of Hobart and William Smith Colleges. Our partners at WEOS are Kelly Walker and Greg Cotterill. Music composed by Alex Karai. This show is funded by an Elliott Grant from Hobart and William Smith Colleges. Our thanks to four fantastic HWS alums: Maureen Collins-Zupan from the Class of 1972, Henry Lenz from the Class of 1972, Andrew Wickenden from the Class of 2009, and Susan Hess from the Class of 1985 for their help and guidance. This show is a production of The Herald, the campus newspaper of Hobart and William Smith Colleges. This has been The Seneca Scene. Thank you for listening, and we hope you will join us next time. And now for a preview of our next episode.
A significant number of cops who I think were probably locals and maybe stateies too, you know, in riot gear came down. Everybody just stood there and waited. And
I remember clearly there was a very palpable fear of violence. You know, there was a lot of anger.
I was angry as hell too, and you know, and I was also afraid.
This St. Clair Street was lined with police cars, and we knew Kent State. You know, this was extremely volatile, and they were standing out there. It was terrifying to see them.
It was going to be okay. Whatever happens next is going to happen, but we're not leaving.
You've been listening to the Seneca Scenes miniseries on Tommy the Traveler. Stay tuned for Episode 6, The Raid at Superdorme, Part 2. From the campuses of Hobart and William Smith Colleges, this has been The Seneca Scene. Thank you for listening, and we hope you will join us next time.